Welcome to the Midday Report. This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3 as well. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. Here in Kodiak, there's light snow, 19 degrees right now, northwest winds 14 miles per hour, gusts up to 21. Today, isolated snow showers, partly sunny though. Although looking out the window, it's pretty gray and I'm not seeing any patches where the sun could poke through. Northwest winds 15 to 20 miles per hour sustained. Gusts this afternoon could be as high as 40 miles per hour. Tonight, the low is going to be about 17 degrees. Tomorrow, Thursday, those scattered snow showers are going to continue, but it's supposed to clear up a little bit and be mostly sunny with highs near 27. Looks like it's going to start to warm up tomorrow and through most of the weekend. For your news today, we're going to hear about Trident Seafoods selling four of their plants in Alaska, including the processing plant here in Kodiak. We'll have more context after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Out of the 138 remaining hostages held in Gaza, 8 are American citizens or dual American-Israeli citizens. President Biden met today with their families. NPR's Mara Liasson reports the administration has been trying for more than 2 months to get these hostages released.
One of those still being held is the 35-year-old son of Jonathan Dechel Hen.
It was a terrific, terrific meeting and conversation. We all came away feeling that as families of hostages, of American-Israeli hostages, that we could have no better friend in Washington or in the White House than President Biden himself and his administration.
The hostage families said that within days of the massacre on October 7th, they were contacted by U.S. government officials, including the president and the secretary of state. And these families say they believe the administration is committed to getting their loved ones home, but they wouldn't discuss any details of their meeting, including whether they were told about any progress in the hostage negotiations. Mara Liasson, NPR News, The White House.
Ahead of an expected House vote to formalize a presidential impeachment inquiry, President Biden's son Hunter Biden, who figures prominently in the GOP's allegations against the president, appeared on Capitol Hill today. NPR's Eric McDaniel has the latest.
Hunter Biden was told to appear in front of House investigators to testify behind closed doors about various business ventures he undertook when and just after his father was vice president. When his request to testify publicly was refused, he held a surprise press conference instead.
Let me state as clearly as I can, my father was not financially involved in my business.
It's true that after months of digging, Republicans haven't surfaced any links between President Biden and his son's businesses. But in the shadow of former President Donald Trump's high-profile criminal jeopardy, they plan to keep looking. Eric McDaniel, NPR News, The Capitol.
Federal Reserve policymakers have decided to keep the key interest rate unchanged. Officials also signal 3/4 percentage point reductions next year. Major market indices are ending the day up more than 1%. The market's been on a tear this year, but NPR's David Gurr reports just 7 companies have been driving most of those gains.
Wall Street has given these stocks a nickname from an old Western starring Steve McQueen.
The Magnificent Seven.
I'm a big fan of the film.
Bank of America's Michael Hartnett came up with the moniker to describe a group of stocks that's up 70% this year. Apple and Alphabet, the parent company of Google, along with Amazon, Microsoft, and Meta, plus Tesla and the microchip designer NVIDIA. The S&P 500 is up more than 21% year-to-date, but Hartnett says Wall Street is getting worried.
Narrow, concentrated markets are always vulnerable.
Hartnett says for this bull market to continue, the rally has to broaden to include more companies.
That's David Gurr reporting. You're listening to NPR News. Delegations from nearly 200 countries agreed at the Global Climate Summit in Dubai to begin reducing global consumption of fossil fuels. The U.S.'s chief envoy on climate, former Secretary of State John Kerry, hailed the agreement.
The decision, supported by all nations of the world, calls for transitioning away from fossil fuels in energy systems so as to achieve net zero by 2050.
The overall goal of the gathering was to push for measures to limit the planet's further warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Songbirds may someday be able to teach people who love to sing a thing or two about taking care of their own voices. Scientists know thousands of species of birds sing to defend their territory or attract mates. And as NPR's Ari Daniel reports, the latest research suggests songbirds seem to do a lot to keep their vocal muscles in tip-top shape.
Iris Adam wondered whether perhaps a songbird's drive to sing might lie in the muscles that produce birdsong. She's a behavioral neuroscientist at the University of Southern Denmark.
These muscles, they are very special, very different, and we didn't know anything about them.
Adam did a set of experiments to learn more, including one where she kept the males from singing for 7 days. Here's what one sounded like before and after.
And I don't hear a difference, really. But
Females could. 6 out of 9 preferred the song from a male who'd been singing daily, suggesting songbirds may have to do regular vocal calisthenics to stay maximally attractive to females. Ari Daniel, NPR News.
It's NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Neon with Ferrari. Michael Mann's film about Enzo Ferrari fighting to save his empire, his family, and win the biggest race of his career. With Adam Driver, Penelope Cruz, and Patrick Dempsey. Opens in theaters Christmas Day.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
And it's just about 12:06 in Kodiak. I'm Brian Benoit. It's time for your midday report. Trident Seafoods, one of the biggest seafood processors in the country, announced yesterday that it's selling a third of its Alaska plants. KMXT has this report that it's a huge move for the company amid a tumultuous seafood market. 4 of Trident's processing plants in Alaska are now for sale in Kodiak, Ketchikan, Petersburg, and False Pass. The company also announced a significantly scaled back winter season for their year-round plant in Kodiak. The historic Diamond NN Cannery in South Naknek and the company's support facilities in Chignik will either be retired or sold as well, according to the release. Multiple fishers contacted by KMXT said it was a huge surprise. Trident spokesperson Alexis Telford declined to comment, saying they're focused on their employees and fishing fleets at this time. The announcement comes on the heels of a reduced fall salmon fishing season across most of the state and just a month ahead of the opening of Kodiak's Tanner crab season, which is expected to be the second largest harvest for that species in decades. There's a storm of issues in seafood markets right now. Processors have offered fishers some of the lowest prices for their harvest in years, sparking stand-downs and protests across the state. The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute's conference in November pointed to declining demand for seafood, huge harvests, and foreign competition as some of the key problems. In a press release, Trident blamed similar reasons for its move to sell. The company's cost-cutting efforts also include laying off about a tenth of its corporate staff. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois. And in other fisheries news, the total amount of pollock allowed to be scooped up by trawlers in the Bering Sea will stay the same next year. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more on how the move by federal fisheries managers has generated criticism from conservationists, tribes, and trawling industry alike.
Alaska's pollock fishery is responsible for the vast majority of salmon bycatch in the region. And amid alarming declines in returns of multiple species of salmon to Western Alaska rivers, the pollock trawl fishery has faced increasing criticism for its perceived role driving the crisis. But the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which oversees federal fisheries and the trawling industry, say the claims are unfounded. The Federal Fisheries Management Council moved to keep the total allowable catch, or TAC, for pollock at 1.3 million metric tons during its December 9th meeting in Anchorage. That wasn't the ideal outcome for trawlers. Trade organizations representing the trawl industry say the decision is misguided and could lead to missed opportunities to harvest increased numbers of mature pollock in the Bering Sea.
We can't bank them like some fish species. They will age out of the system and they will be not available to the fishery.
Stephanie Madsen is the executive director of the At Sea Processors Association. She told the council the industry request for a modest increase to the pollock quota, which was ultimately denied, was already a compromise.
I would just remind you that the Russian fishery in the Sea of Okhotsk and the Western Bering Sea take more pollock than our Eastern Bering Sea pollock. So a 20,000 metric ton increase in the Eastern Bering Sea is likely to have very little impact on a global situation.
On the other side of the debate, tribes and conservation groups representing communities hit hard by salmon crashes in Western Alaska have called for reining in the pollock fishery.
We consider the salmon that do return to our rivers are survivors of climate change, which they experience in both their freshwater and marine stages.
That's Therese Vicente, programs manager for the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, a group calling for greater tribal co-management of resources in Western Alaska.
And that to us means we ought to protect every one of them, to be precautionary, to be protective with the factors we can control, because they're so vulnerable to climate-driven ecosystem changes.
Dozens of tribes impacted by salmon crashes have made calls for a greater voice at the federal management table, including pushing for Alaska Native representation on the 11-member council. Council member John Curlin noted that requests from the Association of Village Council Presidents and Tanana Chiefs Conference to meet with the council ahead of the meeting hadn't panned out.
We have been making a lot of efforts to improve our process for tribal consultation and to try to ensure that when tribes and tribal consortia and so forth are interested in talking to us, that we do that before the council takes final action. We made a number of attempts to reach out, and unfortunately we're not able to make those connections.
Both tribal groups are currently suing the federal government over the way the Alaska pollock fishery is managed. Councilmember Ann Vanderhoven, who introduced the motion to hold the pollock quota steady, pushed back against the notion that the pollock fishery is a significant driver of salmon crashes.
We have heard calls and public comment to reduce the pollock tack in recognition of the current salmon crisis in Western Alaska rivers and the devastating impacts that that crisis has on subsistence users and Alaska Native cultures. But the best scientific information available does not support the assertion that relatively small adjustments to the pollock tack will measurably or significantly increase salmon escapement to Western Alaska.
The pollock quota for 2024 is set, but for 2025, the quota has yet to be determined. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council's next meeting is scheduled for February 5th through 12th in Seattle, where it plans to discuss potentially refining the environmental impact statement guiding management decisions. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
And looking towards sport fisheries, the Alaska Board of Fisheries held a multi-day meeting last month to discuss proposals changing fishing regulations in the Lower Cook Inlet. Jamie Deep has more on what this means for anglers on the southern Kenai Peninsula.
The board approved a new management plan for freshwater king salmon sport fisheries, changes to the Nanuchik River regulations, expanding a personal use fishery season, and more at last month's meeting. The new management plan was unanimously approved by the board. It took the actions the Alaska Department of Fish and Game have done through emergency order in recent years and turned it into regulation. The plan set thresholds for king salmon sport fisheries on the Anchor River and Deep Creek to open based on what are preseason projections for king salmon will meet Anchor River's sustainable escapement goals, which has not been met in recent years. While the fishery is open, anglers can only use unbaited single-hook artificial lures. If in-season projections fall under these thresholds, the department will also close the fisheries. For the Nanuchik River, which the department takes broodstock for and stocks with hatchery king salmon, fishing for and retaining naturally produced king salmon can only occur by emergency order from the department's commissioner. Another proposal changed the bag and possession limits for hatchery-caught king salmon on the Nanuchik River and was amended by board member Eric Carpenter. The final proposal set a bag and possession limit of 2 hatchery salmon. It also prohibited keeping wild salmon. Unless the department finds it necessary to change regulations, anglers can use baited, single-hook artificial lures. Deciding whether to keep or release wild salmon from the Nanuchik sparked discussion from board members and the public. A point repeatedly brought up was the mortality rate associated with catch-and-release practices. While there is no exact number on how many king salmon survive after being released, estimates from the department tend to be low. During public testimony, people such as Nanuchik resident Teek Vanek found the mortality rate from catch-and-release to be too high and that keeping wild salmon would keep them from going to waste. However, during deliberations, Carpenter pointed out the benefits of releasing wild salmon.
My assumption is, and I hope that I'm right,
is that we're still going to put more wild fish on the spawning grounds, even with that small assumed mortality, which will hopefully accomplish two goals. Meet the escapement goals, provide more opportunity.
Board member Mark Carlson-Van Dort was concerned with the department's ability to enforce the regulation and wanted to see broodstock numbers go down to reduce a future surplus of hatchery fish.
I think you're going to see a significant influx of people down in that space, the area, to try and maximize that opportunity. And if the department really has that kind of a surplus of fish, I think you really need to consider reducing your broodstock take and reducing that surplus in other ways that aren't going to be, you know, putting a potentially a very significant impact on the neighborhood, on the community.
The board passed a proposal 4-3, with Carlson-Van Dort, board member Mike Wood, and board chair John Wood voting against it. Outside of the meeting, John Wood explained his approach to voting on changing limits for king salmon on the Lower Cook Inlet.
So someone comes to me and says, we want to increase the take of kings on the Kenai Peninsula. At this point in time, my automatic reaction was, I don't think so. You know, you're going to really have to sell this one. And that would just be me going into the process.
For saltwater king salmon, the board unanimously approved establishing a summer guideline harvest level of 8,500 in the summer and increased the winter level to 5,500. Residents in the southern peninsula will also see a longer season for the China Poot sockeye salmon personal use fishery, which the board extended to run from June 15th to August 15th. Among proposals that failed included one that aimed to ban helicopters from taking sport anglers to Lower Cook Inlet streams for trout fishing. In an interview after the meeting, board member Greg Svensson said it likely would have passed with some wording changes.
One other board member said that he would probably have supported it if they had limited it to those four streams, you know, the Anchor, the Nilchik, Deep Creek, and Stariski Creek.
The next meeting will be in Kodiak on January 9th to 12th, where the board will discuss the region's finfish regulations. In Homer, I'm Jamie Deep.
And students in rural community in the Northwest Arctic are showing their school spirit by designing and printing their own t-shirts. As KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, an after-school club is saving the money on merch by making it themselves.
Good afternoon, Ambler Grizzlies. I hope everyone's had a terrific Thursday.
Ambler School is similar to many schools across the country. The smell of fish sticks waft through the hallways. Students rush between classrooms, chatting about the upcoming school photo day. But the community of Ambler, located about 140 miles from Kotzebue, is home to around 300 people. It's off the road system, about 45 miles above the Arctic Circle. Only about 70 students attend the local school, and 95% of them are Alaska Native, primarily Inupiaq. Besides trophies celebrating athletic achievements are handmade caribou mukluks, birch bark baskets, and beaded gloves with beaver trim. Posters with inspirational quotes hang on the walls, written in both Inupiaq and English. School lets out around 3:30 each day, but many students stick around for activities, from sports to reading club to Grizzly Gear Club. Grizzly Gear Club is an after-school activity group that prints t-shirts of Ambler's mascot, the Grizzly. The club meets after school in an empty classroom where stacks of folded t-shirts and shiny colored paper, trimmed in irregular shapes, rest on circular kid-sized tables. And the club's sole member, 12-year-old Chloe Cleveland, is getting ready to begin printing t-shirts.
Uvanga Adira Ashak. I'm Chloe Cleveland, and I'm from Ambler, Alaska.
She's by herself in the classroom, looking at colored pieces of vinyl. She says there haven't been many other students in the club since volleyball season started.
I am the only one who has been coming.
Although Chloe's been the only student attending lately, she says it's her favorite after-school club. Her teacher and club coordinator, Claire Cleveland, who goes by Claire Maud, joins her later to assist with some of the more technical aspects of the printing process. Claire Maud says the idea for Grizzly Gear Club came to them a few months ago when the school was considering the cost and logistics of sending printed t-shirts to the village.
So in the past, we would order them and look at them and be like, man, we could make these if we had, you know, the machines.
This fall, the school purchased two small machines and an iron to print their own shirts. The machines connect to a computer to cut the t-shirt design onto iron-on material. The designs are printed backwards, and specialized tools are used to pull apart cut designs before they are meticulously positioned to be ironed onto T-shirts. Chloe says it's a challenging process, but she's getting better at printing.
Sometimes mess up, but it's okay. That's what my teacher will say. If you mess up, it's okay. You could try again.
Claire Maud says the kids are getting more out of the club than just printing skills.
I think it's good for their self-esteem. But that's part of the reason that we wanted to get more back into school spirit, so that our kids will take pride in that, to own it, something that they've made themselves.
The club has one design so far. It's a two-colored print in yellow and blue, Ambler's school colors, and depicts the front view of a ferocious grizzly bear. It's running towards the viewer with an open mouth and sharp claws. Claire Maud says she hopes that her students embody some of the characteristics of their mascot.
If you're out anywhere in the country and there's a grizzly, you're going to know there's a grizzly there. And I think that is one of the things that I would want my kids to walk in with confidence, to not be afraid to ask questions or state their opinions or be themselves. I want them to have that natural confidence that any grizzly will have walking around.
T-shirts sell for $15 for youth and $25 for adult sizes. The price helps cover materials. More information is available on the Ambler School Facebook page and in Ambler at the school office. In Ambler, I'm Desiree Hagen.
And we'll be back with the Island Messenger in just a minute.
Some good news about where prices are likely headed. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The Labor Department's Producer Price Index can signal the direction of consumer prices in the months ahead. That index was unchanged in November. Lower energy costs helped. Analysts had expected a slight gain in wholesale prices. Tesla is updating software on nearly all of its vehicles sold in the U.S. to address regulators' safety concerns over its partially automated driving features. The changes are meant to boost driver awareness while those features are engaged. A cargo ship carrying jet fuel came under missile attack near the Suez Canal. That's a crucial global shipping route. The missiles missed, but this was an escalation of similar attacks prompted by the Israel-Hamas war. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
And first up, we have the Filipino-American Association of Kodiak is hosting their annual Christmas party. It's a potluck slash program at the Ed Harmon Armory Building. That's at 125 Powell Avenue, Saturday this week, December 16th, from 6 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. You can come and join them in the joyous evening of delicious food, dancing, singing, games, and prizes. They ask that you wear either semi-formal, formal, or traditional Filipino attire. And the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center is having stories, crafts, and activities about nature and wildlife that they're calling fun, Families Understanding Nature. That's Wednesdays from 10:30 to 11:15. December 6th, they were learning about bald eagles. And today, December 13th, Aleutic visors. There will not be activities on the December 20th or the 27th, but the program is free to the public. And you can call them at 487-2626. And the Kodiak Harbor Lights Festival and Boat Parade is going from 5 to 9 p.m. on Saturday as well, between the St. Paul and St. Herman harbors. You can join friends, neighbors on Saturday to watch the Kodiak fleet decorated with holiday lights parade through the Near Island Channel. Boats will rendezvous at 6 p.m. north of the Near Island Bridge and proceed south through the channel to Pier 2 in the outer harbor. If high winds prevent the parade, the public is encouraged to walk the floats to see the decorated boats in both the Townside St. Paul Harbor and the St. Herman Harbor on Near Island. For more information, you can contact the Kodiak Maritime Museum at 907-486-0384 or email them at info@kodiakmaritimemuseum.org. And today, December 13th, the Planning and Zoning Commission is having a work session at the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Tomorrow, there's an Assembly work session, again, in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's at 6:30 p.m. as well. Meetings are open to the public. Meeting packets are available on the Borough website. You can contact the Borough Clerk's office for any questions. Another community bulletin, Traveler's Destination, Y Valley Walk with Randy and Dan Bush. That's today at 6 to 6:30 at the Kodiak Public Library. You can join for an evening of armchair travel with Randy and Dan Bush. Enjoy learning about their travels through the Y Valley of Great Britain. This walk was a long-distance footpath in Wales and England following the course of the River Y. Randy has prepared a slide presentation that will make you feel like you're there. And you can join an event to talk about community support and caring for folks with dementia. That's Friday, December 15th at 1 p.m. at the Senior Center. Respite care provided for loved ones. It's open to families, friends, and care providers and personal care assistants. For more information, you can call Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak at 907-512-0600. And Angels of Love, you could place your loved one's names on an angel for display at the hospital holiday trees. It's displayed in the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center November 25th through January 15th. You can honor the life of someone you miss, celebrate the life of someone you admire, $10 donation for each angel. You can make your donation in the following ways, in person at the hospital admitting or at the specialty clinic reception desk. Or you can mail them to the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary, care of 1915 East Reznov Drive, Kodiak, Alaska. You can pay online as well at kodiakhospitalauxiliary.org using the donate button and email the names of your loved ones by using their contact button or email address. Again, that's kodiakhospitalauxiliary@gmail.com. All donations support the hospital's Healthcare Career Student Scholarship Fund. Caregivers of Kodiak's youngest community members are invited to the Diaper Distribution Center for free diapers and wipes on the fourth Friday of every month from 4 to 7 p.m. Diapers are available in all sizes on a first-come, first-served basis while supplies last. Size swaps are welcome. You can bring outgrown diapers in good condition and trade them in for your baby's current size. That's at 1910 Reznov. The Diaper Distribution Center is a ministry of Frontier Southern Baptist Church. The next distribution day will be Friday, December 22nd, from 4 to 7 p.m. And Scuttlebutt, a galley table workshop for youth, is Tuesdays from 4 to 5:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library Craft Room. Scuttlebutt is a free weekly storytelling workshop for students in grades 9 through 12 where they practice building and sharing stories with help from experienced storytellers. If you have questions, you can call 907-486-7396 or email elamy@kwrcc.org. That's elamy@kwrcc.org. And for Galley Tables Season 10, the next event will be Friday, February 2nd, with the theme being The Truth is Out There. That's it for your community announcements. Thanks for tuning in to the Midday Report.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.